Welcome to another episode of the Career Talks podcast. I'm your host, Orlando Haynes. Each and every week, you know the drill. I bring in amazing talent, amazing experts to share actionable advice for your career and life. But definitely want you to support the podcast by subscribing on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you can find Career Talks podcast. You'll see my face, so you should know it's me. But definitely support the podcast. So tonight, I have this amazing young lady that we spoke. I've been connected on LinkedIn for a little while, but we chatted a few weeks back and the energy is amazing. We clicked right off the back. Super excited to have her on to talk about this topic here. Let me welcome the dynamic Miss Natalie Serebrennick.
Woohoo!
How are you?
I'm happy to be here. I'm great. Thank you so much for inviting me. I feel like I'm like part of this like celebrity offering here. It's awesome. I've always been a fan of your podcast, so it's nice to be on it.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I love the mission that you're doing and the work that you're doing. So what I first wanted to always ask is tell folks about you, your business, and how things are going.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hello, everyone. For anyone that doesn't know me, I started my business officially a year ago. It's a blend, a beautiful blend, like I like to say, of the coaching element as well as the consulting, because I take that nearly 17 years of work experience that I had working in capital markets and I infuse that into my guided support with my clients. So I love to be able to blend both into one. And on a personal side of things, I'm a mama of two bears, a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old, which keep me busy all the time. And happily married to actually my high school sweetheart. So that's something new. Yeah.
Awesome. That's cool. So you mentioned your background, which I was going to ask next too, is share a little bit about your corporate experience in that space and how that those skill sets, that talent, that knowledge has helped you transition into, you know, into the coaching element.
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, Orlando, when I reflect back on my journey and all of the ups and what feels like all of those really low moments, I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for that journey. So I look back with such fond memories, even though looking through like the pain of the struggle, because let's be honest, if everything went perfectly in my career and I had no adversity to deal with, and I didn't have to figure out how to actually like ask for that next promotion, and my boss just gave it to me because he saw my potential and my value and rewarded me appropriately, I probably wouldn't be here. It's going through that quote unquote grit of an experience compounded that builds up your strength and confidence to be able to shape the new generation, right? And also existing generation going after what they want and being able to put themselves in situations where they have the support to ask for what they want and to get to go after that. And that's why self-advocacy is so near and dear to me, because it reshaped my whole way of thinking when it comes to honestly boiling it down to as simple as asking for what you want.
Mm. So I love the fact that you shared yourself, you know, your lived experience, which is phenomenal. And then so you're using that, your backstory, your lived experience to now coach other professionals in this space. Do you find that that's a gap in most professionals, that they're not being, you know, their own self advocate?
100%. I mean, wow. I don't know about your experience, but there was definitely no rule book when I joined the company. No one's pulling you to the side and saying, okay, so this is the lowdown. This is how you advance in your career. These are the types of conversations you have to have with your manager. This is how you need to structure it. This is how you have to ask for it. This is how you build visibility. Oh, and by the way, this is what it means when you build visibility. This is just all these elements that you end up learning through each experience. Right? If you want something in your career and you're not getting it based on what you're currently doing, chances are you're going to try to change things up and try a different element. And that's what self-advocacy was for me, it came at a point when I thought I did, I couldn't have been on more of a high, to be honest, thinking that that was going to be my pinnacle year, that everything was going to change in my trajectory. And then it didn't. And I was pissed. I was so upset. I was like, it's funny because self-advocacy for me was born from a place of frustration and anger, which was interesting. But it's created this lifelong practice for me that ended up amounting to such incredible highs throughout the rest of my career journey. And now and it bleeds into your personal life as well. It's not just the career growth aspect. It's who you are as a person asking for what you want, right? I can even dumb it down to standing in line at the grocery store and someone bypasses you and cuts you off in line. And how do you approach that? Not with confrontation, but with confidence and directness and being able to communicate for what you want. Or asking, raising your hand in a meeting and asking for what you want. All these elements are born from that place.
So we're still pretty much operating from, I hope people identify or see my work and promote me based on that without being the person who was raising their hand. So obviously that is a broken model. And you're now saying, right, it's definitely be the person who's lifting their hands up. But at the same time, you have to be the person that's executing.
Yes.
Right. You can't raise your hand for opportunities and you're not performing in your current run. there's that duality to be careful for.
Yeah, 100%. And it's a big part of it, perception, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You might think you're ready, but reality is, are you? And it's setting aside the ego and just being very truthful with where you're at and the gaps that you need to fill. And that's a big part of what I go through with my clients is understanding and how to communicate effectively and openly with your manager earlier on in the year to establish what those goals are for the end of the year, right? A lot of people just think that, oh, a month before year end, I'm just going to pop in and say, oh, by the way, we're good on that promotion, right? Yeah, no, it's not a good strategy. It's how to get really intentional about what your career goals are and inviting your manager into the process, making them accountable to make sure that happens.
So how would they do that? So the folks that are listening and saying, okay, Natalie, I hear what you're saying. How do I confidently bring my manager into the fold early enough to let him or her know that what I want for my career in the next 12 to 18 months looks like X? What are those conversations?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, for step one, you need to know clearly what that goal is. So you need to have clarity around the ask itself, right? And before even communicating that ask or that goal with your manager, step one, I would say, is get clarity. Step two is do your research. Understand, so for example, right, a common goal for a lot of people is to get promoted. So generally speaking, and I know from personal experience that this was absolutely available on my interest site on the company, there's a promotion grid. And it specifically outlines the criteria at every level of promotion. So if you can honestly do a deep dive into the performance and the skill sets that you currently have and what's expected at the level that you want to be promoted at, once you start doing this gap analysis for yourself, you can start strategizing on what you need to fill. But that's part one of that exercise, just so you bring reality into the equation, right? Are you truly ready for it? And before you jump too quickly to make that decision, yes or no, have that conversation with your manager as early as possible in the year. And communicate, A, what your goal is, and then approach them with the research that you've done. It creates that much more credibility and willingness. Oh, she's serious. She's actually done her homework. It changes up the conversation as being like, I don't want to say nagging, but, oh, I deserve this, so give it to me. But it's like, entitled. Oh, I deserve it because of A, B, and C.
Right.
And then you work towards filling those gaps together by creating a plan with him or her so that you can be successful at the end of the year. And once you walk away from that discussion with your manager, asking them for their advice to how to like fill the gaps, that's the best way. So you want to know how you best get your manager's buy-in and invested, ask them for their opinion. So now all of a sudden they're telling you what they think you should be doing. And if you're doing the steps that they've laid out for you and you're following up with them, they're sure as hell going to be much more invested in your success because they gave you those opinions to begin with.
So how do we unfold? Say we did that, right? First two steps, phenomenal. You got clarity on your goal. You did the research. You're having that conversation with your manager and the steps have been identified saying, here's what I need you to do, Natalie or Orlando, to get to, you tell me you want to get here. Here are the steps where I need you to execute in. Where do you get the confidence though, right? There's some people who can do that part, but still, there's still so much more to the confidence piece to be able to, like you talked about at the top of the broadcast, was raising my hand in the meeting, being more vocal, you know, sharing your thoughts. How do you get folks to that stage that just may be more of an individual contributor and not so much want to be vocal in sharing the ideas? They just want to, you know, plug along and again, hopes it works.
Yeah, that's such a good question. My favorite way to go about tackling this challenge, that regardless if you call yourself an extrovert or an introvert, it's uncomfortable to talk about yourself in that way. It's uncomfortable to showcase and prove on the spot as to why you deserve that next milestone. I completely appreciate that. What helped me significantly was keeping an active, what I like to call, like some people call it a brag sheet. I called it my work journal. No word of a lie. Every Friday at 2 p.m., my work journal calendar popped up, work on your work journal. And not more than and it's still ingrained. I still, 2 p.m. on a Friday, I'm like, wait, do I have to work on something? What's going on? Because it was so ingrained in my head. And that was me time to reflect on the week. At the end of the week, usually Friday afternoons, a little bit slower, it was me time to reflect for that 15, 20 minutes. It didn't really take longer than that, on the wins of the week. What client meetings did I have? What was my value to that meeting? What was my input? What were some of the takeaways? Can I apply some metrics to it? I created a spreadsheet that was very simple. It's a one-tab spreadsheet that is easy to populate, and it just got into the habit of doing it. And what I loved about that is, A, it felt really good to be able to put items on that spreadsheet. So your confidence is building as you're reflecting back on the value that you're bringing to the team and to yourself, to your clients throughout the week. And also it's keeping your wins top of mind, which is so huge, because I'd love to know from your experience, but for me, I was randomly put on the spot. Oh, Nat, what are some of your wins for the week?
Yeah.
And that panic induced, oh my God, do I have anything to say? It was just automatically eliminated because I was doing this exercise for myself on a weekly basis.
Finish your thought.
No, I was just going to say it helped me so much.
So it's funny that you say that, because I don't know if I shared with that, a friend of mine and myself, we created a planner specifically for that. It's to track all your wins and projects and things like that. And we call it the Career Accelerator Planner. So it has questions though. So it talks about, you know, it'll say, what projects are you working on? What departments? You know, what is your piece to it? And then it has pre and post questions. What was the outcome? What relationships did you make? You know, what was the, you know, what new ideas did you come up with post the completion of that project. So I'm glad that you said that, because a lot of people you'll hear that don't track their performance, and the whole thing is around that conversation too, when it comes down for performance reviews. And if they're looking over the extended 6 months or the full year of your work, that manager's not going to remember everything. They're trying to remember theirs. They're not going to remember everything you've done. They're waiting for you to say, okay, tell me what you did this year.
And honestly, would you even remember? Honestly, one of my biggest pain points and a thorn in my side was that end of year request. Okay, guys, it's time to prepare your personal performance reviews on the year. And I'm like, oh God, I did it to myself again. I didn't track anything. And now I'm forced to come up with all of my wins. And I never had confidence that I was going to remember all of them. So after, admittedly, a few years of this pain, I'm like, that's it. I am starting to track. I can't do this to myself again next year. And then it grew into such a habit that,
I'll send you a digital copy and let me know what you think.
Yeah, I love the element of adding the questions in too, because it just takes it to the next level when you're really thinking about your contribution. And as much as possible, if you can start to quantify, you know, with metrics, those inputs right away. And what manager doesn't want to see? I grew revenues by 15%. Like, if you could put a number to your wins, it's always favorable.
It's a good idea. It's a good idea. So you talked about, right. So I'm jotting things down as you see, if you ever see me turn my head, that's what it is. It's goal setting, right? Clarifying, research, the wins, you know, tracking the wins, and then building those confidence. I think that's a crucial way to build the confidence. Even if you don't have the confidence, you can at least have confidence to speak to what you've executed for the year, which then can lead to, you know, getting the next promotion, whether that's vertically or laterally in what you're thinking about. But for folks who like the meeting piece, I've heard this come up a few times, where being able to share your ideas in a meeting, I think that's a completely different confidence, where now you've drawn attention to yourself. You raise their hand. Everybody's like, okay, let's see what you have to say. Have you come across any professionals who struggle with that? And have you coached them in that area?
Yeah, it's more common than people believe, right? I think it's a misconception that it's a unique situation. It only happens. It is very common. And I used to experience this as well. Especially in the early years when you're building up that experience and that, you know, that credibility piece, so to speak. My go-to strategies for really having enough confidence in yourself to be able to share that idea, a lot of it is the mindset, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you can peel back and create a new narrative for yourself in that moment, most of the time, the reason why we don't share something is because we label it immediately as, this is going to be something stupid. No one's going to like what you complete. It's so easy on the spot to come up with a list of 5 to 10 reasons as to why you shouldn't. And they're all negatively based. And chances are, with no proof to back any of those thoughts.
So we self-sabotage in our mind.
Yes, we do.
Right off the bat.
Because you won't actually know good, bad idea it was, if it was foolish, if any of those nasty thoughts are going into your head, it's going to happen until you share and it actually happens.
That's true.
So, right?
That's true. You got to jump in the water and just see what happens.
You got it, right? So a lot of this is, it's more of a strategy, like I like to call it, as a practice of self-awareness of the thoughts that are really going in our heads as we're about to do something uncomfortable. And it's not just raising your hand in a meeting. It's really going after anything in your career or in life in general that you don't have the confidence in because you don't have enough experience doing the thing, right? Because the more you do something, the more you know, those nasty thoughts didn't actually happen. So you start to build much easier, a more positive narrative or quite frankly, you don't even have a narrative anymore and you're just so comfortable raising your hand in that meeting or doing that next thing that you were quote unquote paralyzed to do beforehand. So it's really working through and building that self-awareness piece of what your thoughts are telling you, and then creating powerful reframes as an exercise for yourself to help you overcome that doubt and that fear that stops you from doing that thing. And be honest, you know, okay, how many meetings have you sat in on where someone has shared something, you're like, best comment, that wasn't the best thing to say, but to be fair, it was in and out and you didn't really think much of it probably 3 seconds after that individual said it. Nothing horrible happened, no one died, that person was fine. Like when we start to just calm down with our thoughts and give ourselves the permission to be creative and curious of what's going to happen, a lot of those walls start to come down and you're that much more confident.
I think that's a great point because that's probably the main thing people think about too, is like what I want to say or what I think I should say, is it substantial enough? Is it going to get the buy-in? Is people going to are people going to like it versus will I sound stupid if I say what I'm about to say or think I should say? So I think it's not so much it is the combination of getting yourself out there, but what I say, is it going to make sense? Like, how are they going to take it? What's the view on me after this meeting? Is that going to hurt my credibility if I just ask a question? And it may be a difference, right? From just asking a question to better understand what's going on versus throwing out a statement, assuming you know what's going on or thinking you know what's going on. So like you said, the mental, the mindness and the self-sabotage, the things we make up in our head prior to doing it can be paralyzing.
It can be.
Don't say anything.
I know. And it's so interesting. Something that you just said that I want to take the opposite of. You said it would hurt our credibility if we said something that was stupid or was off base. What's happening to your credibility by you not being the person in the room that never says something? Like, let's talk about the alternative. You think you're protecting yourself by not overcoming this fear-based thinking of the uncomfortable, you know, stepping outside of that comfort zone and being uncomfortable. But what are you doing by not? By keeping yourself comfortable and silent because your thoughts are so powerful that they limit your action.
That's good. That's good. That's really good. So there's more risk than not saying, well, depending on, but to your point, I think it would be more risk not saying anything and versus saying the wrong thing maybe once or twice or, you know, not so much. Because you'll learn from speaking up versus not speaking up. And then I think you'll be able to get better knowing, okay, maybe let me start with a question before I give my opinion. Just so I have a good understanding. But like you said, if you say nothing, you're going to be overlooked and overlooked and overlooked time after time after time, assuming is Orlando and Natalie paying attention in this meeting? Like they never have an input. They never have an opinion. What is going on?
Exactly. And just to state the obvious, how true is it that what you're going to say is so off base? You're in that meeting for a reason. You didn't just walk off that street and sit into that meeting with those stakeholders, professionals, clients, teammates. You're there for a reason. You deserve to be there. Chances are much higher percentage that what you have to say is going to add value versus being completely off base if you want to look at the odds that way. Trust in your abilities and that you got to where you got to for a reason. And if you have something to say or a question to ask, then that is your flag to keep going. Don't keep pushing down. Yeah.
And I think it's beneficial to ask the clarifying questions, to just say, I'm sorry, I'm not understanding your viewpoint or where you're that part of it. Can you clarify? So, you know, so I'm up to speed, or however you want to phrase it. I think that's better. So they don't, again, than sitting there quiet as a mouse, because either they're like, you're not, like I said, you're not paying attention, or you may think you know it, but you really don't care what's going on because you have no input. You're not engaged. And so asking, you can ask and say, hey, I'm not tracking what you're saying. Please clarify for me so I can completely understand the direction and the mission and the why behind why we're going this way. And so there's confidence in that, that I love those types of questions. And so guaranteed two or three other people in that meeting, depending on how big the meeting are, they're thinking the same thing, like, whew, I'm glad you asked, because I was a little lost too.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, if you actually look at the data to support that, more people will thank you for asking mm-hmm. that question that you were terrified to ask. I've had that happen countless times. Oh, thank God you asked that question. Right? When you leave the meeting. And it's also sometimes that validation in itself is further proof that, okay, I need to keep getting out of my own way and keep doing this because it's working. Right. Yeah.
And sometimes it's coming from the most senior people in the room. They're like, oh, good. Because
right?
I didn't yes. know you guys were taking this.
Exactly.
So when it comes to, again, all right, we're overarching, we're building that confidence. What are some other ways that we can get ourselves to that point where we're consistently, you know, advocating for ourselves? What are different scenarios and situations? What does that look like in corporate?
Yeah, and it's an interesting question when you start to peel back the layers, because self-advocacy can look, you can slice and dice it in so many different pillars, right? It's the confidence to be able to speak up in a meeting. It's being able to ask your manager with confidence about your next promotion or making more money. It's also having the confidence to build your network, you know, creating that visibility within the company, which a lot of people don't think about as a strategy for themselves, because they're so caught up in putting their head down and doing good work that they're not thinking about, oh, who should I be meeting to gain these strategic alliances in the company? Because maybe those strategic alliances are going to help open doors down my path. It's an avenue that's not explored enough. And quite frankly, I'll be the first to admit, I didn't tap into that part of it until later into my career. Again, where's the rule book? There is none, right? Like, it's one of those things that you learn through osmosis. You start to dive deeper into this overarching self-advocacy journey for yourself, and you start to gain that confidence in being able to do all of these amazing things for yourself. Mm-hmm. It's that taking control of your career and doing the things for yourself because you know deep down that you're growing, and sometimes you have to grow through discomfort, but on the other side is such a huge milestone that you're hitting and surpassing that's going to lead to something else. And the visibility part was big for me. I'm talking about building visibility with the management hierarchy up the chain. That was terrifying for me to do, but to put myself in a position where I'm meeting with like the CEO of the bank. Mm. Guy doesn't have time for anybody, and what he's going to spend some time chatting with me. It's like creating, how are you going to get to that level? Maybe that first conversation is not with him. Maybe you build up, it's baby steps to get to that point, but why not? The C-suite at every company, the senior managers at every company, they're people just like anyone else. They have families, they have their own personal goals, they have their professional goals. Really building connections and advancing your visibility within the company really does come down to just building those connections and nurturing them. It's
love that.
Right?
Love that. So
no. Technical difficulties. Oh, yes, we're back.
There we go. We're back, folks.
Yes, we're back.
It was a literal mic drop.
Yes. So but the connection, the volume is coming. Maybe switch it to the mic. Yeah.
Okay. It's thank you.
No problem.
How about now?
Yes, perfect. We're back.
We're back, folks. So the question is, talk to us about one of the elements for self-advocacy is the continuous learning piece. In your role or trying to understand the business as a whole or different functions, how important is that to supporting your self-advocacy?
It's so important. When I look back at my journey, so my journey at the bank, I worked at the same bank my whole career. So nearly 17 years was all at BMO. And I got in equity research for a couple of years. And as quickly as I could, I moved over to the trading floor because I love the energy, the dynamic nature of it all, the competitiveness, all of it. It really spoke to me at that time. And every 3-4 years, I found myself in a different seat. And
that's good.
It happened to be because I just knew deep down inside, I'm like, no, there should be, something's missing here. Let's go find it somewhere else. Or a new opportunity presented itself because I started making more connections where people were asking me if they would want me to join another team to gain experience. And so I happened to fall into it, but as I reflect back on that journey, absolutely trying new things and putting yourself in situations to keep up-leveling your skill set and your experience is so important to bring about that well-rounded perspective of your growth and what you truly want to do. Outside of risking, if you're in a role that you absolutely adore and nothing could be better and you're making bank and you're so, you love your manager, you love your team, like why would you leave? I understand that situation, but even if you're in that situation, what are new ways, new responsibilities that you can take on and build more elements to your role so that you're not risking stagnation? That risk of stagnation was so high and so scary for me that I didn't even let myself get to that point, and I made a change before that was going to happen. The thought of being bored and stuck was just so scary.
So you led me right into my next question, which is great. So you reached that point. So basically you said, okay, I'm going to take a new challenge somewhere in this organization. How did you seek that out? Mm-hmm. What were the steps? Because you have to know enough about the business, or, you know, you've talked about different parts of the business to better understand to say, okay, I see a pathway. If I go left, that'll make me go up versus if I stay here, this is it. This is the roof. This is the ceiling rather. So how did you see that and work towards that goal?
Yeah, it's interesting because the way that I did it is probably not the way that I would coach my clients to go through it. Yeah. So when you reflect back, I didn't have a direction, which is something that I very much encourage my clients to build out. Like, what's that vision mm-hmm. for your growth? I'm not one to forecast the next 10 years because that's, in my opinion, there's way too much that can happen up until then. But let's get a good vision of what your career looks like from now to the next couple of years. How do you want to continue growing? Do you see yourself staying? If what are the yes, the whys? And it's really just building out what that vision is. I didn't do that for myself. I happened to create these opportunities because I would be tapped on the shoulder and I would be asked for these opportunities because of everything I was building up until that point and the connections that I was making and building those relationships. I created those opportunities without me seeking them. So every single change that I made, it was because I was asked to do it. If I had to redo, I would be more intentional with where I wanted my career and the direction to go. And I'm all about, you don't need to set it and forget it. It's not one plan and you can't make any changes. Every step of the way, it's that check-in with yourself, that yearly, quarterly, whatever metric that you're going to use. Is this the direction I still want to continue? Does it still bring me joy? And checking in on, it's almost like the pros and cons list that you would do with any big decision in your life. Having that intentional reality check with yourself at each stage of your career. And then asking yourself at the end of the day, am I happy to proceed with this direction? Or is there a new path that I'm more interested in exploring?
I like that. That's good. Here's one curveball for you. I know you can you can knock it out the park. When it comes to, you know, navigating the office politics, the old term, you know, the water cooler talk and things like that, just bad mouthing certain people. And how do you navigate that, then strive for something greater and still have, you know, the respect for who you are, your character and things like that. So, but how do you navigate the office politics?
Well, the best rule of thumb is don't participate. Mm-hmm. So avoid.
Sometimes that's tough for folks.
I know. And it's tough. It's tough, right? Some people, you know, it's called drama for a reason. We get sucked into it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not perfect. I was sucked into some drama earlier on in my career, and there's certain individuals that I worked with that, you know, just got to me, and others here, my same frustration, and we would have a chit chat. But I guess rule best practice is to not participate as much as possible and save the gossip sessions for after work when you're off work premises and it's behind closed doors. If you're going to do it, if the pull is so strong and you need to get it off your chest, do it outside of the company walls, right? With maybe some friends over a glass of wine. Vent it out. Do what you got to do. The risk of being seen and participating in these gossip sessions, it's just too high. If the reputational risk of being associated with this drama-induced conversation, as much as management might even participate at times themselves, it's still not publicly, like, it's frowned upon. It's mm-hmm. not a general, this is good behavior. I think it's easy to classify not good behavior. So as much as you can pull yourself out of the temptation of participating in not so good behavior, I think it's for the best. Avoid the gossip sessions, avoid that. And if the pull is so strong, then do it off premises and off office hours.
That's great. So, because I'm sure if people are getting pulled in they're like, I'm leading the charge. It doesn't matter. But so what we've talked about, right, all these different steps and strategies and pockets kind of accumulates to really having a good brand, personal brand inside corporate. What are some additional ways would you share with folks to say, hey, here's how you can build a positive brand to help you in your self-advocacy?
Yeah, I love that question. Well, not gossiping for number one.
Right? Check. Yeah. Right.
Check. Number two. The visibility piece is big. It's really growing. A lot of people get caught up in their head and they're like, I just need to network and build relationships with my immediate team. And that's it. I don't need to be building relationships with other peripheral teams. It's not going to help me. That's the wrong way of thinking about it. And also take the pressure off about what it means to build a relationship. It could be an easy conversation. So the water cooler talk, instead of gossiping about so-and-so, oh, did you see what they did? Or did you hear what they did? Hey, how was your weekend? What'd your family get up to over the weekend? Or, oh yeah, how was that trip, by the way? And you start to have these informal chats that build that familiarity and that likability across different teams and players, which adds to, and then all of a sudden, you're then exchanging interchangeably that likability casual conversation for more strategic alliance. You can lean in and out of casual to more professional conversations with ease. And it's the same strategy you would do with someone at your own level and someone more senior. So that's definitely, that's one powerful one, I would say.
So for folks that want to get to the next level, maybe say they're not a manager, do you suggest or share to say, hey, maybe you should start showing leadership now in different ways, you know, before getting the title? Because, right, some folks are more, you know, I need this title next to my name, et cetera, and for whatever reason. So do you say, okay, well, let's start seeing these leadership skills now. What are some ways that you can say, okay, promote or showcase or take on leadership, you know, characters or projects, whatever it may be, to help you get to that next level?
Such a great question. Well, for starters, what I like to do is right away, I'm actually working with a client right now in this specific capacity, right? How do you showcase that you're ready for that leadership position? You show that you are now. How do we do that? Okay, well, start off by asking yourself, what in your opinion makes a good leader? How would you want to be led by others? And you start to pull back the curtain. At the end of the day, it's a human to human business unless you're a solopreneur working, you know, behind closed doors. But generally speaking, in corporate, it's team-based environments. You're working with other people. If you want to be portrayed as a good leader, how would you want to show up for others? How would you want a leader to motivate you, to inspire you, to get you to push yourself a little bit harder? Being intentional with connecting on what you define as a good leader starts to categorize the traits that you can start showcasing in your day-to-day with your teammates, with the juniors that are working under you, maybe the interns, maybe through mentorship opportunities to giving back. And also asking yourself the question, what does management see as good leadership? It's one thing of what I see, but it's powerful when your vision is aligned with management's vision. So get clear on what management's vision is first, but how do they define a good leader? And if that's not written anywhere, talk to your manager about it. Which manager would look down on you if you approach the conversation in a way by saying, this is an important growth opportunity for me. I would love to be able to start demonstrating more of my leadership capabilities. How do you and management view good leadership? And getting their input and their views is a very powerful way for you to start aligning the behaviors that are meaningful for you and how you would want to be led, align to what they view as being important. Because now all of a sudden, with that alignment, you're better showcasing your capabilities.
That right there is so powerful, Natalie. I think even if someone is a little bit nervous, but if you have the confidence in asking that question, like that is huge. I think that is massive to get that feedback and what the viewpoint of the manager to think like, wow, okay, this person is really serious. They're not just want to plug their head down and, you know, do the work and hopes it work, but they want to know how we view collectively as an executive team or senior management team, what good management looks like here. And again, to your point, if it aligns, great. If it doesn't, you know, do what you have to do to make it work. If you love the company, you still want to stay there, and then work towards that and outline your goals. I'm kind of recapping everything you said, Tracking your goals, you know, don't self-sabotage, making sure your mindset is right, being clear from the beginning. that, you need to make an ebook or something on that. That is so powerful. These steps there, but that final one, I think is the king and queen of it all. Like, what does this organization, as this representation of leadership, look for in upcoming leaders? Mm-hmm. I want to model that so I can get where I need to get to. That's powerful.
Yeah.
Powerful.
And again, not in the rule book.
Yeah. No, yeah.
It's not there, right? And honestly, this piece about alignment, it could be weaved into any which way, not just the leadership. Mm-hmm. It's about how management sees, like how your manager sees your performance, their expectations, understanding what they, and this is a part of the program that I love to teach or to guide my clients through. It's the part where you find yourself in a new opportunity and you think the work is done. You're like, okay, I finally landed that next and I'm so excited. Now I can just do the work. But you have this opportunity to frame what your next few years are going to look like. The sooner you can get that alignment, it's so powerful for your career trajectory in this new seat. I recommend it to absolutely everyone that I work with. It's being so intentional with that first 90 days and cementing that working relationship with your team and information exchange and expectations with your manager, understanding how the quote unquote game works here, because every place has their own version of a game. You just have to learn it and then figure out how to play it well. And doing that with intention in the first 90 days sets you up so well for success for years to come.
Love it. Love it. Gave them a time frame too. That's really good. So we're coming up on time. Time has flown already, but you will be back. So don't worry. So you mentioned a program you like taking. What's the name of your program that you have? Share with the folks how they can connect with you, participate in your program, get your amazing coaching, et cetera.
Yeah. Thanks for asking that. So I have two programs that weave in and out, but they're two independent. I work with that job seeker that is either still stuck in their current place and looking to transition to a new and better opportunity for themselves, whether it's internally in their own company or externally, because there's always opportunities still within the same company to explore potentially. So I help them throughout that whole process through the guide of getting the clarity piece, the mindset, building the confidence, how to network for yourself, building up your marketing brand online, getting that LinkedIn on, like going through all the steps with the interview and then that like set up for success for the first 90 days. So I have that program and it's about a 3-month experience depending on how we slice that. And then that other program, similar 3-month in nature, but it's that professional that wants more. They want to set up, they want help getting to that next level of career, and they still enjoy what they do, but they're struggling with getting that alignment with their manager, or they don't know how to build up their confidence and ask for what they want or speak up with confidence and intent in a meeting and build on that feedback loop, the communication. So it's they know that they're in a good spot. They're just not utilizing their opportunity to its fullest. And I help them do that.
Love that. So those love that.
Yeah. And then that's the awesome. Best way to reach me, honestly, is LinkedIn. I live on LinkedIn all the time. It's my home.
It's my that's our digital. This is our metaverse here. LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Share the folks your website that'll be in the notes afterwards as well.
Okay. It's basically my first link, NatalieSarahBrennick.com.
Awesome. Easy. Question I always ask folks at the end of each conversation is, what gets you up every day to do what you do? Why do you do what you do?
I love it so much. I just love it. The transformations that I get to, because I truly view it as I get to, not I have to, or I it's such a privilege to be part of my clients' transformations. Nothing fills my cup more than taking, working with a client and moving them from frustration, fear, anxiety, self-doubt, all of the feels that you generally have when you hire someone like a coach to help you, to confident, empowered, clear. It's such a trick. I just love the transformation so much. I love my clients. I love the whole process. I hope that answers it. That's a gushy, very gushy response, but it's so
true. No, that's good. People can see it. You can see it. It's very emotional. So, right. You're touching lives and changes lives. So that's phenomenal. So folks, Natalie, thank you so much for the connection. Now for the friendship, like I said, your energy was infectious when we first chatted. It was like, absolutely, we're going to have a great time on this conversation. So absolutely more to come. We'll support each other throughout our journeys. And we have, a friendship outside of just, a like and a comment here on our content. So super excited to support you in your journey. Continue to go forward. Any last thoughts, comments, message you want to send folks around self-advocacy?
It is never too late to start. If you're, it's never too late. And it's figuring out the baby steps so you can build up momentum. And before you know it, it's a strategy that becomes a lifelong practice. And the only regret is not starting sooner. So I hope everyone is empowered to start their own journey in self-advocacy and what it truly means for them. And it's about customizing that journey for yourself and not mirror anyone else's. Because once it's genuine to you and it's customized to you and your growth and where you're going, it'll be that much more meaningful when you hit those milestones.
Well, we're going to end there, folks. I appreciate you joining us tonight. Continue to support, continue to watch, and we'll catch you next week on the Career Talks podcast.
Thank you. Bye.